Ladies and gentlemen, for your delectation and entertainment, here is the James Whale Radio Show. Welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining me this beautiful day. I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. Robbo, is it beautiful where you are?
I'm looking out the window now. Yes, the sun is there.
Yeah, of course, that is the voice of Rob, the producer of this extravaganza, and he is the man you should address any complaints to. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com is the email for the program, and if you just put them for Rob, he can deal with it, okay?
Yeah, because I have a difficulty reading, so they don't get read, really.
Yeah, and that's as it should be. Well, we've got music from Freeway Mad. And in fact, actually, we're going to talk to the guys from Freeway Mad, are we not?
Yeah, we can do. I'll give them a call, yeah.
And also, I will be talking to Tim Lovejoy. We talked to Simon Rimmer a few weeks ago on this program. Tim Lovejoy, of course, rose to stardom with Soccer AM on Sky Sports, has done various things on radio and television, and he is, I don't know if you've seen Sunday Brunch on Channel 4 on Sunday mornings. It's one of my favourite TV shows, so it's good to have Mr. Lovejoy. We've had Mr. Rimmer, now we'll have Mr. Lovejoy on the programme later today. But here is the thing, right? Here we are in the summer season, the silly season, when apparently nothing happens because politicians go on holiday. So we have to find stories to talk about. Well, of course, we've got the Labour leadership battle to entertain us with at the moment. And I don't know whether you've had any thoughts, Rob, about that. I don't know whether you've joined the Labour Party just so you could vote for Jeremy Corbyn.
Apparently that's what the done thing is, isn't it?
Well, yeah, apparently everybody's joining up to the Labour Party so they can vote Jeremy Corbyn in because they think it will be very entertaining and very funny. In fact, I must start, remind me to ask Tim Lovejoy that question.
Okay.
And Jeremy Corbyn, of course, one of the things he says is he wants to renationalise or look at renationalising the railways. And how many complaints have there been recently about the railways? Many, many complaints about the railways. So I thought it'd be a good question to put out for you on Facebook, which we have done. And some of the replies are quite interesting. Graham White says, what a good idea. Push profits back to infrastructure and technology. The utilities could do with some renationalisation as well. Have any of us, whether we are politically left or right, have any of us found that denationalising power, the railways, telecoms and things like that, have we benefited in any way, shape or form?
I haven't.
Are you sure?
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, are we getting cheaper gas and electricity than when it was nationalised?
No.
No. I mean, although nationalised industries did, they were like dinosaurs. They were very difficult and very cumbersome. Maybe if they were renationalised, they would work better. I don't know. Let's see. Bruce says, I would nationalise services that everybody needs. Water, power, cleaning, health, transport. These have no place in the private sector. Lots of people seem to feel that way. Lottie said, all we want is an effective service and also the profits to go back into it, not into somebody's pocket. John Underhill says, private enterprise brings innovation, modernization, new ideas, competition, and reduced prices. Those who advocate nationalized industries have never experienced their dead hand and bureaucracy. And John's right. When we had nationalization, everything was ground exceedingly slow. But now we've had years and years of private enterprise. Are we benefiting? I mean, it's not really as if you can, you know, railways, for instance, you can't say, well, I'll get another train. You can only use the one railway on the line that you go to work on, can't you? You can't say, listen, I don't like you. I'm going to get another one on a different line because there isn't one. So I don't. I've never seen how that works.
It's so expensive, the rail, though.
Well, yeah. But the dead hand of bureaucracy, it's quite right, because when it was nationalised, nobody had to do anything. Nobody had to achieve anything. Nobody had to, you know, make sure things worked well. So if we could have a bit of a meeting of minds, it might work. John Cooper said, wouldn't it be nice if we were able to nationalise Microsoft or Facebook? I can't see how that would work. You know, I don't see how that would work. So the government was actually involved in a business that made money. Well, yes, that's a good point. Yes. Nationalisation, no thanks. Let the business experts get on with what they want or what they do best. Yes, they will make some mistakes and they will lose some jobs if merited. All politicians lose is a few votes, and it's us, the public, that pays for the mistakes. Glass of milk, anyone? Good point. Very good point indeed. So that debate continues. So who should lead the Labour? I don't know. I mean, it's the idea that Jeremy Corbyn turns up in a shirt and a pair of trousers. He doesn't wear a suit. And he talks without a script. Does appeal to a lot of people. Whether our political system can work like that. Who knows? I have no idea. I think it's a very interesting time in which we live. Anyway, welcome to the James Whale Show. You can find us right here on your radio station, on your device. Can we call things devices rather than radios? Because, you know, you could be on a laptop, you could be listening to me on a phone, you could be listening to me on a tablet.
I'm not sure it works, because it'd be the James Whale Device Show.
Or shorten it to the James Whale Vice Show.
I could go with that, yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, you never know. Hey, let's start the programme off. Let's have a bit of music from a band called Freeway Mad. You know, I like a bit of rock. I do. We don't have enough rock. And these guys are all in their 20s. They're young guys. But they're producing, I think, some really good music. So let's listen to it. We'll talk to them as well. Let's get a couple of them on after this. This is Dangerous from the album by the same name. Have a listen to this. We'll be right back. Right, that was Freeway Mad and a track from the album that's called Dangerous. That was the title track. Now, we got George from Freeway Mad on the line. George, hi.
Hello, hello.
Now, George, listen, I love your music, and I think it's a breath of fresh air. But you guys are all in your 20s, aren't you?
Yep.
What made you decide to buck the musical trend and play rock? I mean, this is the sort of music that was really happening 30 years ago.
Well, it's just the music which I like the most. It's the music we all love the most. So it's, when we write songs, we write music from our heart and what we feel and, like, you know, what we like the most. We don't try and do anything new. We just, you know, we like that type of music. We write in that style of music. And that just happens to be, from, you know, it sounds like it's from that sort of era. Plus, at the same time, we think it'll be good because of the fact that there just isn't that many bands around doing this type of hard, classic rock feel type of music anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Now, you're the lead guitarist, aren't you?
I am the guitarist, yes.
Yeah. And you take your top off a lot and dive around the stage half naked. Which is apparently very necessary in rock music.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yes. It's a big necessity in rock music. It definitely is, yes.
You went to music college, or you are at music college?
I went to music college last year. I graduated about this time last year. Yeah, it was really good. The lead singer, he literally just graduated a couple of days ago. Same place as I went. Same thing, same sort of course except the vocal side of it all.
I mean, you're pretty hot on the guitar, I have to say. I've always been a huge fan of Jimi Hendrix. Have you heard much music by Hendrix?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of music by Hendrix. To be honest, he's actually really not one of my favourites. I sort of more... Yeah, boo. I can hear the boos in the background.
Who's your guitar hero?
Probably, there's two. Paul Kossoff from Free and Randy Rhoads. They're two very different styles, but for what they do, they're both at the top of my list of favourites.
Okay, let me have a chat to the lead singer now, who's known for wearing silly hats indoors and outdoors as well.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. Listen, you know, for a rock singer has to be able to sing. Lots of people think they just scream. But you have to be able to sing to do rock the way you do it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with other bands, sort of more screamy bands, I guess you can let the vocals suffer a little bit. But the style of music we do, you definitely need to have a good voice behind you, yeah.
And what made you decide rock was the way you wanted to go? Because listening to you, I imagine you can sing most kinds of music.
I actually started as a classical singer doing musicals and operas about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was a mixture of my uncle, my dad, and my granddad getting me into rock music. And, you know, one day I thought I'd give it a try. I really enjoyed singing it, and it sort of went on from there. It just became something that I really loved to do.
I mean, you guys are on a par age-wise with One Direction. Are you finding that the audiences, the younger audiences, are liking what you're doing?
We've actually been quite surprised, I think. A lot of people who we thought would only listen to pop music and would sort of dismiss us quite quickly have actually been really into it. But we attribute that to, you know, our songs aren't just straight up loud rock music. A lot of them have got a really nice groove and a really nice melody that everyone can get into.
Well, I tell you, one of my favourite bands are AC/DC. Brian Johnson, the lead singer, and I have known each other for a long, long time, and I think you definitely guys have a bit of AC/DC about you. I've played Dangerous. What would you like as the lead singer? Which track would you like me to play apart from that?
I think Speed Machine is probably the track that we'd all love to hear.
Speed Machine.
Yeah, definitely.
You got it, guys. Here it is, Speed Machine from Freeway Mad. Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
There we are. Freeway. I'm doing my DJ thing, Robbo. What do you think? I'm doing my DJ thing.
You still doing it?
Yeah, no, I'm doing it. Freeway Mad and Speed Machine. Hey, do you know, I think they have a huge future. You heard it here first. Speed Machine, and before that, you heard Dangerous from the album. If you want to find out more, go to their website, freewaymad.co.uk. Right, let's talk to Tim Lovejoy. Get him on the phone.
Sitting in my room and I'm on my own. It's cold outside and I'm feeling alone. So I turn that dial and my radio's on. I hear James Whale and my troubles are gone. I hear James Whale on the radio. I hear James Whale and his podcast show. I hear James Whale on the radio. James Whale and his podcast show. James Whale on the radio.
I have to apologize for I've stolen the name of your former television show for one of my radio programs. That I do for the BBC. So I want to apologise. I call it Something for the Weekend.
Perfect.
For my television show in the 90s that I used to do, which featured on Britain's Best of the Worst TV, I noticed, on Channel 5 last week.
Was it the James Whale radio show?
Yeah.
I love that Nick show. That's one of my favourite shows, especially when you got callers and you had the button, you had to try and stop them swearing. I mean, these days everyone swears, but in those days they weren't allowed to be rude, were they?
No, not, and bear in mind that was after midnight, that show, as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other thing we share in common, well, a couple of things we share in common. I hate coriander.
It's a disgusting herb. It never used to be around, did it, years ago? And then suddenly it arrived. And now, I mean, it used to sometimes be an Indian food, but now it's in every single cuisine you get. Someone goes, oh, let's stick coriander on it. I mean, it's just disgusting stuff.
Yeah, I don't mind it cooked in Indian food. I mean, Indian is one of my favourite foods. I like that. But it's not good to eat it raw.
Exactly right. But when they garnish it on Indian food, it's disgusting as well. I'm sorry to everyone out there who does that. But when it's used as a garnish, if it's actually cooked through, then it might not be too bad. But, you know, actually the coriander seeds are the stuff they use mainly in Indian food. And that's not too bad. It's the actual putting the leaf all over it. It's disgusting stuff.
I don't know about you, but to me it tastes like soap.
Yeah, well, apparently it's because we're not evolved enough, because our bodies still see it as poison, so I read not so long ago. And that's why coriander really splits people. We think it's poisonous, and that's why it tastes perfumey and soapy and disgusting, whereas other people who are more evolved than us, they know it not to be poisonous, and then their palates can accept it.
Well, I live with a vegetarian, Mrs. W, who thinks coriander should be put on everything.
Oh, no, that's disgraceful. Mm. Not living with a vegetarian, that's fine. That's okay. It's the coriander bit which is disgraceful.
I'm not sure about living with a vegetarian. It's a bit strange, but there we are. The other thing, of course, we share is, and so I spoke to your friend and colleague, Mr. Rimmer, on this program the other week.
Okay.
And, not so much of a friend of yours. Okay.
No, he is. We're really good friends. We speak to each other on a daily basis. In fact, I'll phone him straight after you've told me whatever you're about to tell me now.
Well, I did. I raised the point that I was very pleased to see that you had come out.
Have I? I don't remember that show. I must have been drunk. What do you mean?
Oh, no. Come out as a member of the... Well, you talk about, you know, we haven't evolved enough eating coriander, but we have evolved enough as far as our hair is concerned, because you have joined Mr. Rimmer and myself as people who have managed to grow through the problem of hair on the head.
Yeah, exactly. We've evolved enough to think, why waste money on shampoo and hair products? Why not just have none? And that's a lot easier solution to the problem. So it's been a bizarre thing, my hair loss. It's because I would have cut it all off much shorter years ago. But It's just weird working with Simon because it just is really bizarre having two bald-headed guys on a TV show. So I sort of always, that's what's been preventing me doing it so far. I keep looking at him and going, oh, God, we can't stand there both with bald heads. But we are now, so that's it. That's it. It's a done deal. That's what's happened.
Good, because when I mentioned this to him, he was reticent to talk about it, and I felt there may be some problem between you. So that's out in the open. That's good.
No, I've always embraced the idea of going bald. I've always thought it's quite funny because I get offered continually free hair transplants for, you know, for PR purposes. They'll give me a free hair transplant if I do advertising and promo for them. And I'm always thinking, you know, I quite like the aging process. I'm not sure I want to spend ages putting, you know, moving my hair around my scalp. I think it's just quite a strange thing to do that. I can't quite get it in my head that that's a good option. But I don't know, would you do that ever, consider it?
No. Look, I have to be. There is an infomercial that I made 15 or so years ago, and it was for a product by an Italian company. Now, let me get, I can't remember. Oh, I remember what it was called. It was called Stimovit. Stimovit. Yeah. And what it looked like was a hairdryer, but in the top of the hairdryer, it had little mallets, and you held this on your head and it beat you on the head to stimulate hair growth. And they asked me if I would front what they call an infomercial, you know, like that's a half hour TV show. I'm more than happy to take their money. Didn't work, by the way.
I'm absolutely, and I'd like to say I'm not, but I'm so obsessed with my thinning hair. I'm obsessively look at those celebrity bald websites. Have you been on them where they show you a celebrity, they show you him going bald, and then they show you what he's done, whether he's spraying hair on or he's wearing a wig or he's gone for a hair transplant? And I'm on these all the time. They absolutely fascinate me. And then I spend ages looking at bald celebrities and how they're coping with it, and then other celebrities who have got hair transplants and how they've coped with that and what it looks like, etc. And I reckon, don't test me, but I think I know pretty much the status of every celebrity on TV's hair at the moment, whether they're going transplant or they've gone for spray on hair. The spray on hair is ridiculous. I love it. It's so ridiculous. I love it.
Well, let's talk about Paddy McGuinness then.
I don't know his status. You tell me.
Listen, I love Paddy. He was on this show some weeks ago, but I think it's spray on.
There's a couple of celebrities I know who do it, and I'm not going to do it. It's not up to
Come
me
on.
To do that for them. But when it's really weird is when you're up close, because it's kind of sort of, it looks all right, but it's sort of slightly plasticky as well, and it's a very strange thing to do, to spray your hair on in the morning.
Do you feel better now? I mean, I saw myself 20 years ago on my TV show on Friday last week, and I tend not to look at things like that. And I thought, yeah, I obviously did like to keep the hair there. I mean, I was receding and bald on top, and sometimes, unless it was a high camera angle, you really couldn't see that. But I wish I'd shaved it all off years ago.
Yeah, my problem is I don't recognise myself, so I keep seeing myself in a mirror or a shop window. I think, who's that bald? Oh, it's me. And I can't, it shocks me. And so it's quite hard coming to terms with it, I think. But what I'm doing now is I'm just slightly growing the top back a bit to see if it works slightly longer on top and shorten the sides. I don't think it does, but I'm just trying it. And then I'll zip it all off again. But it's quite nice just waking up in the morning and going, oh, it doesn't matter. It looks the same as it was last night when I went to bed, you know, and you don't have to bother thinking about styling it or anything. I do quite like that. But, you know, well, the thing with it, James, is good-looking fellas like us, we can get away with it, can't we?
Exactly. The other day, I was looking at myself in the mirror and I was shaving, and I suddenly thought, I'm just going to cut that little tufty bit in front right off. I have it very soon, right off with the just... And it was just great. The way it felt was fantastic.
There you go.
But it takes a while to get to that stage.
Yeah, it's a bit, Simon used to shave his completely bald, and then it'd be completely clean shaven as well. It was quite strange. And then, but now he just has it all very short on top and has a little bit of stubble. He's a much sexier man that way, I believe.
Yeah, well, I stubble is sexy. Listen, we'll leave the hair for the moment there. If you do get any problems, please just give me a ring.
I will
and
do.
I can do hair cancelling at any time you want.
That should actually be a job, shouldn't it? Because so many men go through this. That should actually be a job. Rather than come to a clinic to help you grow your hair, should be come to a clinic and talk to James Well, who'll make you feel good about not having hair.
Help Hairline.
Help Hairline, perfect.
Help Hairline, yeah.
Made there.
Yeah. Okay. Now, listen, Tim, when I first saw you on the television, it was on one of those satellite channels, wasn't it, doing a TV show about football?
Yeah, Soccer AM many moons ago.
Yeah. How did you first, I mean, what were you doing before that?
I was working on The Big Breakfast. I was a producer there. It was kind of the explosion of TV in those days, wasn't it, as we all remember. Mm. Suddenly more channels arrived and I was working on The Big Breakfast as a TV producer and I'd gone from researcher to producer in 2 years, which is unbelievable. But as I say, there was explosion of things like live TV, which took a load of staff away, and all the satellite channels just kept taking people away, so they kept having to promote up really quickly. So I'd managed to get on very swiftly into that position. And then I just liked football at the time. I've always played and watched football, and I thought to myself, you know, Sky Sports is a growing company. It's not getting any smaller. Little did I know how big it would get. And I just wrote to them and said, have you got any producer jobs going? And then when I arrived there, they offered me a producer job, which was such hard work for doing Soccer AM and another show called Soccer Extra. They offered it to me to produce it, but for less money than I was getting at that Big Breakfast, two shows rather than one. And I said no, and then one of the other guys knew that I'd been making show reels there and said to the guy, why don't you get him and also get him to present? And so they offered me that. And as I said, I took a pay cut to do it, but it was just brilliant. I was suddenly like a player manager. I was writing the show, producing it, and presenting it, and it was absolutely fantastic. Fantastic 11 years. Amazing time.
You didn't do the theme tune as well, did you?
I didn't do the theme tune. I should have done the theme tune. What was brilliant about it, though, was because we were on Sky, so we were doing an entertainment show on a sports channel, and no one there knew what we were doing, really, and the ratings were just rubbish when I joined, and then they were just gradually going up, so everyone just left me to my own devices. And as you know very well, when you work on terrestrial TV or you know any of the main channels or something, you've always got commissioning editors there who come along and go, oh, I think you should do it like this or do it like that, and they interfere. At Sky Sports, no one interfered with the show because no one knew what we were doing, and it was just really—it was really bizarre when I moved back into normal TV, because suddenly people were just coming out of offices, you know, and going, "We think you should do it like this." I'm like, "What? How do you know? What do you know about this? Why are you qualified to know this? You know, you're just as qualified. I'm just as qualified as you. Let one person make a decision. And you know what TV's like? Six people make a decision on one thing rather than just one person making a decision." Which is, I suppose, why Cal's so successful, because I think he makes all the decisions, doesn't he, probably, at the end of the day. But, you know, it's like, so it was an amazing time, and I think that's why Soccer AM became actually quite successful, even though it was only on Sky Sports, because it was just a group of guys making it up as we went along. It was fantastic TV. A bit like your show.
Well, a bit like your show as well. I mean, the thing about my television shows, I did it like I do my radio shows. And you're absolutely correct, though. People come out of the woodwork now and say, I think you should do this. And you say, why? Because I've done radio for 40 years and it's been okay. I've stayed employed anyway, more or less. And people come with ideas, then you say, well, we tried that 10 years ago and it didn't work then and it won't work now. But they, oh, yes, we'll try that. And then when it doesn't work, you and I will cop it, not them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And the great thing about radio is when you're on radio, you are basically your own producer because you're live and there's not a lot else to do. You know, you've got obviously producers who can speak down your ear, but it's basically your baby and you're driving it. TV, a lot of it's pre-recorded and there's a lot more time for people to come and have a chat with you and tell you what they think you should be doing. And I always think the biggest problem is finding the tone of the show. And that's where people don't understand it. You've got to let the presenter find the tone of the show. And I think on Sunday Brunch, Simon Rimmer and myself, we found the tone, and that's the important thing. And I don't think someone sitting in an office can do that. That's up to the presenter and up to the, you know, to the production staff to nurture the tone and make sure that's correct. And that's more important than a lot of other things, actually, I think.
I think that's why Sunday Brunch worked. I love it. I'm still waiting for an invitation on there. If I'd made myself into a celebrity, you could have invited me on, but I can't think of a reason for you to have me on.
We need to find a reason to get you on. You need to come on, I don't know, archery or something.
Let's talk about Jose Mourinho and his dislike of female doctors.
I think you've been a bit tabloid there by saying female. I think it's dislike of a doctor. I don't think it was just particularly aimed at the fact that she was a woman. I think he wasn't happy with her running on the pitch, but I think you'll find that Jose is a master of deflecting media away from the team, and everyone's more obsessed with his obsession with the doctor now than the fact that we've not won a match so far since last season, I don't think, unless we've done it on penalties. So I think that's what he's up to. I think that's his game. It does make me laugh that Jose goes into the papers all the time and spouts off, and everyone buys into it. He's an amazing man, really, for that. So I think he's diverted media traffic away from the team, and I think he's an expert at it.
You've obviously seen the clips of him. He's been very nasty. I mean, very rude. And okay, it is a bit tabloid to say she's a woman. Obviously, she is a woman, and she's one of the highest profile women in Premiership football, as far as I understand it. But he really is quite bullying in that clip.
Yeah, I've said this a lot to people. If you're looking for, I'm always astonished. If you're looking for good morals, and if you're looking for, you know, a nice set of people, nice set of manners, I don't think football's the area that you should be looking at. I mean, I think for a long time you'd get people going, oh, they're rubbish role models. What example are they setting? Yeah, I think sport is not the greatest place to look if you're looking for that, because the rewards for winning are so immense that people will go to any lengths to win, and they're not gentlemen like maybe they were years ago when Bannister was breaking records and stuff. They are trying to win to get money, and thus you'll find Lance Armstrong will cheat and athletes will cheat, and loads of people will go around the ref in football, and rugby players will stamp on each other and Bloodgate and everything else. I think it's very hard to find morals, good standards in sport. And I'm sorry to say that, because we all want it to be there, but I'm just not sure it is. I think everyone's looking for that extra yard, and some people will. I'm not saying everyone's a cheat, by the way. I'm just saying that you know, it's not where you really should be looking at if you want the best example of human behaviour.
If you're talking about that, I think you're right. I think that the idea of winning has been so put down in this country by the politically correct. It's been such a bad thing to want to win that we're now beginning to fight back, and people are actually saying, yeah, we want to win at it. And if I hear another person talk about something called legacy after the Olympics and before the Olympics, it used to make me go mad. Oh, for goodness sake. Listen, people play sport because they want to win. Right.
Yeah.
And then when they're good, they want to make money out of it. Forget the legacy. I don't think many of the sportsmen and women could really care less about that.
No, exactly. They're doing it for themselves. That's why they're doing it. And you know, I feel bad about saying that, because everyone dresses it up like they're doing it for the kids. No, they're doing it for themselves, and they're enjoying it, and they're doing their sport. And I love watching sport, but I'm not in any pretense as to what it is. It's a way of people, you know, getting on, enjoying themselves, and maybe making a few quid if they're playing a sport like football. But there's a lot of other sports out there where they're not making a few quid, and they're just doing it for the love of it.
If I'd known that football was going to make you so much money when I was sort of a teenager, I would have taken more interest, except that at that time, being a pop star or a disc jockey was where the money was. You know, it's okay for a few in this business, but the majority of people don't earn as much money in the world of entertainment than they do in being a football star.
Yeah, I know. I used to do 606, the football call-in, and I was always amazed when people used to phone up and go, "These guys, they're so lucky. They're da da da. They're this. They're that." You know, I'd I'd cut my right arm off for this. And I'd go, well, you had the opportunity as well. It's not like footballers all went to a privileged school or something, is it? You know, they don't begrudge them the fact that they were good at football and they'd done whatever they had to do. So, you know, I don't begrudge them anything. I think that's... And we've got to always remember with football, there's huge industries off the back of it. Basically, BT Sport now, Sky Sports, they're all making money off the back of football. So the money's only going to go up because by them owning it, they make money. And so, you know, it's just basic economics. It's going to carry on going up whilst there's two rival companies bidding against each other. So if you think they're earning a lot of money now, you wait for the next few seasons to tell you the money's going to go up and up and up.
You're right. And for that reason, I don't think they should be held up as role models. They are money-making machines, footballers. And if you're good at it, if you have the talent to do it, good on you.
Yeah, the football's changed dramatically in my time. And this is a really hard conversation for me because I think people get angry with me for saying things like this. But it has changed. You know, it's gone from team ethics to individual ethics. People care about the individual now, it seems, much more than the team, especially the marketing and the media. You always hear things like, he deserves to play Champions League football. It's such a bizarre thing to say to someone who's earning over £100,000 that he deserves to leave a team to play something else for his career. He's doing pretty well, you know, if he's earning that sort of money. And the other thing I find quite weird is we, as football supporters, we used to pay our money to go in and we'd be actually paying the wages of the players. Now we're not supporters anymore because the money's coming in pretty much from TV rights. We're now customers, and it's kind of changed slightly the dynamic. And football fans hate hearing that, but it is kind of true. We are pretty irrelevant now, whereas we used to be so relevant. If you know, Chelsea, I think one season we had 12,000 on average going in. That's really struggling then to find players, you know, for wages. When you're doing 40,000 a week, you can get more wages. Now it's all about the TV deal. Doesn't matter whether you've got 2,000 in there or 100,000, you know, your money's coming in through TV.
Why don't they bring the cost of a ticket down then?
Well, because we're customers and supply and demand. If no one turned up, they would. And that's the thing. They've made the sport more successful. More people want to go, and so the big clubs get more and more people going, I suppose. And people, it's a good industry. People want to knock football, but I remember when I first went to Sky Sports, all our stadiums were falling apart, and we had all sorts of problems, you know, with lots of disasters which had happened, and the game was in really bad way, you know, with football violence and you know, and stadiums, you know, Bradford Fire, etc., etc. There have been a lot of really bad things happen. And so they did, after the Tay report, they rebuilt all the stadiums. They suddenly had this sport, well, a lot of stadiums, especially in the top end. You've got a sport with brand new stadiums in it. I mean, it's amazing. You know, so everything looked new and shiny and brilliant, and there was a new TV deal. It was just the sport arrived at the right time, and then the Champions League came along, and it just kind of, whoever, you know, the people behind it have just made it into this absolutely huge phenomenon. Football's always been big, but now it's a huge commercial phenomenon, and obviously there's casualties along the way. I mean, you know, you speak to anyone, it doesn't feel real anymore, or you know, that sort of thing. You hear that a lot, and that's obviously the way it is. But the kids of today now, they're enjoying it just as much, I suppose, as we are, just in a different way.
Leadership of the Labour Party: Andy Burnham or Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, I don't know that. I don't align myself to any political party.
No, nor do I. But come on,
I've enjoyed Corbyn's rise, I must say, and I quite like listening to him actually. But it seems to me that if Labour want to get into power, Burnham will probably be a better prospect for them because of the I think he'll appeal to more of the electorate, but. But I quite like what Corbyn's saying because he's just speaking from his heart, isn't he? And I quite like that from a politician. I don't think he's playing the game, and I quite like the fact that he's not playing the game. He's sort of just saying what he believes in. So, but it's absolutely nothing to do with me. I'm a swing voter, and I swing between all the parties of which one I like, and I don't have any allegiance to anyone. So,
but the thing is, Jeremy Corbyn is a guilty pleasure. Isn't he? That's what, you know, all politicians look the same and say the same sort of stuff, and whoever is in power for my lifetime anyway, although there have been variations slightly, it's always been the same. Could you imagine if Jeremy Corbyn suddenly won a general election? And there he is. He appoints George Galloway as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and goodness only knows who we get in other departments. Can you imagine how this country would suddenly be?
No, I can't. I do you know what I'm for? Is direct democracy. I'm really into this idea. I've been looking at it a bit now. In Iceland, the Pirate Party are polling the highest at the moment, which direct democracy, a bit like how Switzerland do it. So the public get to vote on a lot of issues. And I thought after Scotland, where they had such a huge turnout for their independence, I thought, you know, the public are ready for it. Why do I need some politician to make decisions for me? Why can't I make my own decisions on what? Why can't the country make decisions and majority rule? Why can't we go back to direct democracy? You know, it's years now before I have a decent. Actually, it might be the Europe vote, but there's years before I get to vote on something which involves my life. Why can't I vote on more things? And I really believe strongly in this. I think it'd be really good, and I also think they shouldn't be allowed to hide things from us, and we should be allowed. I'm quite into. Have you looked into the Pirate Party? I quite like what they're doing.
I have, but there's a one word that stops all of this, and shall I tell you what that word is?
What?
Apathy.
Yeah, but proved in Scotland that they weren't. There wasn't apathy when they actually had to make a decision themselves, and it was a yes or no, and they understood it. They saw whether they understood what was going to happen, I don't know, but they understood they were either going to vote to stay in or get out, and they knew it. And there was a huge turnout for that. And I think the country's ready for it. And if you don't want to vote, then don't. But people like me who want to vote, I don't trust my local politician. So, you know, why should she be representing me?
Well, no, listen, I think you're right. And I think we have the technology to do it. But we live in a country where everybody's so on the surface, we're polite. Underneath, of course, we're as rude as we can possibly be about everybody. But when you get to meet people, you're very nice to them. And that's a problem we have. We don't say it like it is. We could quite easily, I'm sure, have apps on our phones that would allow us to have referendum all the time on almost anything. But whilst we have an unelected chamber and whilst we have too many politicians in the House of Commons spending too much time in the bars, not enough time voting on things, you know, we can't change it. I mean, I don't know. I'm beginning to think benevolent dictatorship is probably a good idea.
Well, I've always said that I should get more than one vote. Because I bother, and I think because I bother, they should maybe give me 10 votes, and people who don't bother, maybe we need to go down to the office, you know, to do our polling, and they give you a little test, and if you don't know the answers to who's actually standing before you walk in, you're not allowed as many votes as me. I actually do it though, and I make my children do this. I get all the to watch me do it. I get all the leaflets put through my door. Everything: Christian Alliance, BNP, Green, everything. And I read through them all because I'm a good citizen before I go down there to make sure that I'm fully informed. And then, but I've usually made my mind up before then. But I always do it just because I feel like that's being a good citizen, not just voting Tory or Labour because my dad did. I just think that's really a weird thing to do. I think, you know, what happened when your dad was voting is not as relevant as what you're doing now. It's your decision. You've got to decide what to do. But I think the whole system needs changing.
Well, I was doing a phone-in the other day about whether or not 16-year-olds should be allowed to vote in the European referendum. And we're getting the same old things. And then a young girl phoned in and said, James, I've got a really good idea. And I said, okay, well, I don't think people over 50 should be allowed the vote.
Oh.
And I said, okay, why? She said, because you've had your time. The country is as it is, and it should now be the younger people who get to decide on whether or not we stay in Europe and how things... Thinking about it, I had to say, do you know, I think you've got some merit there. Maybe because all the older ones vote anyway, maybe the youngsters should be forced into... It's your country. You're going to be here for the next 50 years. We're not. You better make the decisions.
Yeah. Well, actually, I speak to my parents quite a lot. We're a very political family, always have been, grandparents and parents, everything, always around the dinner table. Political discussions go on. That's just a token that we're going to do that. And listening to some of my parents' views recently, I'm with her that people over 50 shouldn't be allowed to vote, because my parents, some of their views are quite weird nowadays. But that's, you know, that's what happens when you get older.
I think you should have your parents on Sunday brunch. I think that would be a really entertaining show.
I'd never work again. I'd never work again.
Well, that's depressing. OK, well, listen, great. Thank you very much indeed for your time, sir.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right, buddy. Take it easy. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Ah, thanks to Mr. Lovejoy. You're listening to James Whale's radio show here at jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Visit our website and go to the shop. In fact, not only go to the shop, pop in, buy something. At this time of year, a James Whale baseball cap can keep the sun out of your eyes, and a James Whale t-shirt will make you look one of the trendiest people on the beach.
Okay, if you say so.
Yeah, no, I do. I absolutely do. And if you're listening to us for the first time, nice to have you with us. Thank you very much indeed. We've got lots of radio stations out there, of course, that take this program. So if you're listening via a radio station, hi. And if, of course, you would like some jingles for your radio station, get in touch. It'll cost you. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com is my email address. Have we got anything else to advertise at the moment? We've got all sorts of stuff up on our website. Have a look at that. Lots of adverts on there. Go and take part in some of the freebies. Get a free copy of the audio version of my autobiography, which is good for a laugh. On long journeys, if you're going away on holiday, go look at Audible and download Audible links, and you can get a copy free. Right, what are we going to do now? Oh, I know. Pizza Express. Do you ever tip when you go to a restaurant?
Not usually, no.
Why?
Because you don't really... What are you paying for? I mean, all they do is walk over from one side of the room to the other side of the room with a plate. I mean, why do they need a tip?
My family are in catering, so there's a little more to it than that. But Pizza Express staff are thinking of taking industrial action because Pizza Express keep part of their tips, right?
Okay.
The reason they keep part of their tips is if you put a tip on your credit card, the credit card company take part, they take something, I can't remember what it is, about 6p, something like that, in every pound a credit card takes for themselves. That's their cut of whatever you get, you know, you spend. So Pizza Express consider, well, in that case, if you get a tip, you're going to have to pay that. Otherwise, they have to pay. Put that aside. Park that for a moment. Let's talk about tipping people, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Pizza Express, as I say, charge their staff 8% for processing tips. The staff are saying that Pizza Express should swallow the fees. Who's right? Well, I tell you, this is a story about tipping. Why do we tip in a restaurant or tip at a hairdresser's or tip a cab if we tip? Why do we tip those three businesses? Can you tell me?
Historically or sort of morally?
Can you answer the question? Just don't prefabricate. Answer the question.
Oh, that's a long word. I think we tip it because they provide an extraordinary service, usually.
Rubbish. When I go and buy a pair of shoes or a new suit, or I go into the grocery store or the supermarket and I get great service and the girl or the gentleman at the checkout till is very friendly and says, hello, can I help you? Do you want me to bag up your items? That's a lovely day outside, isn't it? Very chatty, very nice. Do I think of squeezing a £5 note into her hand after I've paid for my shopping?
No, certainly not.
Why not?
Because that's what they're employed to do.
Exactly. So why would I give a tip to somebody doing their job in a restaurant, or driving me in a taxi, or cutting my hair? Why would I tip people doing that?
Well, that's my argument at the start, that you shouldn't need to.
No, and if you say, and some people do, oh, well, we're on really small wages, well, then maybe these companies should pay more. We put this out during the week on Facebook. Stevie says, I think people should be paid wages in every job that don't require tipping. And I think he's right. John Lacey says, I only tip depending on the waiter-waitress service. Yeah, well, why? Why do you tip in supermarkets? Do you tip if somebody's been really nice when you buy a pair of shoes or a pair of underpants? You go and buy a pair of underpants in M&S. If they're very nice at the till, do you give them a quid or not? Peter Jenkins says, tipping is a ridiculous and outdated idea. People should be paid a living wage. But I think it's more than that. I don't decry those people who do a great job. Listen, I have part of my family in catering. And it's a great job, and it's nice to make people feel wanted. It's nice to do a good job, and it's very nice when somebody says, "I really enjoyed that." Here, buy yourself a drink. If you want to tip somebody, fine, tip somebody. I blame it on the Americans, of course. Anyway, so I got that off my chest. If anybody wants to talk about this during the week, email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Right, is it time for tech talk, do you think?
Yeah, I'll do a quick one as usual.
Don't do a quick one on my account. You take all the time you need.
Google have changed their name to Alphabet.
What? Why? When did that happen? I didn't hear that.
It's happened over the last few days.
So if you want to Google somebody now, you've got to Alphabet them.
No, you could still Google them, but they're called Alphabet.
Well, that would be stupid. Why would you Google somebody if they're called Alphabet?
Well, that's what they've done, and they can't have the domain name alphabet.com because BMW own it, so that's a bit of a stupid thing, isn't it?
Yes, that is a bit stupid. So why didn't they just leave it at Google?
They want to modernise. So do you know what domain name they've got now instead of Google?
No, tell me.
abc.xyz.
So now I'm supposed to say, they've forgotten Alphabet, have they?
Yeah, they can't use alphabet.com because BMW.
So now if I want to Google somebody, I've got to ABCXYZ them.
ABC.XYZ.
Can I say that whoever the PR people or advertising company that came up with their idea, they're stupid. They're absolutely stupid. Google is now a term and terminology that everybody understands. So why would you change the name?
You can still Google. They're going to keep Google, but their company name is now Alphabet.
Well, what was the company name before?
Google.
Well, what is wrong with... Why not leave it? I can't understand these stupid, idiotic people.
Well, there you go.
That's like saying, I'm fed up with the term blue. I don't like using the term blue. Let's change it to something else. Let's call it... DEF.
Is that going to happen?
No, because it's stupid. I'm bored with calling this a train. Let's call it something else. To modernise it. Let's call it LMP. I mean, what on earth possessed them to decide to change the company name?
It's got us all talking about Google again, though, hasn't it?
Right, OK. Let us now do questions of the week.
OK. Grant
Sharkey. Can you handle this or not?
I'll give it a go. Grant Sharkey, why dig up motorways in the holiday season?
Oh, what a point. Listen, Grant, a man after my own heart. Why on earth? And if you've got to do roadworks, do them through the night. Do them through the night. I'm with you.
And I think this will be the last one because we're running out of time. Mark Gibbs, why should you have to pay a company to find out your own credit score?
I have always wondered that. And quite frankly, I have no idea. There must be another way of finding out your credit score, because it is your credit score. Why should you have to pay another company? I don't know. I imagine because somebody suddenly thought, I can collate all this information together and charge people for it because that'll be more simple than you finding it out for yourself. I might be wrong, but that's unlikely. Right, well, that's it, is it? Because we've had a very busy show. My thanks to Freeway Mad, Tim Lovejoy, and particularly you. For listening to the programme. Our thanks to Rob for producing it. And don't forget, if you've enjoyed this, or even if you haven't, there's another 90-odd shows that you can listen. In fact, there's enough programmes here to listen continually for nearly a week without me taking a breath. This has been the James Whale Radio Show at jameswhaleradio.co.uk. You have a great day. See you next time.
Bye.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.